I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the 4Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the 4Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Q's episode. The news stands for news, and the Q stands for questions. Or it could just stand for anything you want. Have fun. Imagine. But it's questions.
Or we finally just talking about Q in Star Trek The Next Generation and all this. You and I, we've mentioned that character a lot. Eventually we just have to do it. Crossover episode.
Absolutely. We'll have to do the Q versus Q Star Trek James Bond episode. Who would win?
Who would win? And of course, Food Center, where Ken and Joseph fucking food, an ongoing theme. We are going to dive into the news shortly. And let's be honest, it's a big follow up from last week's news episode. And we hope you all listen to our news reactions to the Disney Investors Day last Thursday. Exciting times. And we're going to dive in even a little bit more. Before we do that, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on a Star Wars Life Adventures. I did see that you went for a hike, Joseph, or a walk. Always a good thing. How are you, sir, and what's going on?
Yeah. No, I want to be extra careful with virus raging right now. So the only thing that I do outside the house is take a masked walk where I can walk far away from people, or pick up, food from takeout. So we are lucky to live in a place where we can go for a, relatively short walk and get into Griffith Park. And I just love that sign of Smokey the Bear. Smokey the Bear is just one of the weirdest things I think our culture has ever produced. The cautionary, well-intentioned bear who has the hat, jeans, and no shirt, and a shovel. It's just such a, it makes sense, I guess, from a certain point of view. He's out there in the woods working. He gets hot. And I mean, I understand that shovels can fight fires, but shovels in the woods I associate with murder victims more than putting out fires. But anyway, that image of him in Griffith Park, he's got those big buggy eyes, like he's staring into the heart of a fire and he's seeing his own soul. So I had great fun going to visit Smokey the Bear.
I know right where that's Smokey the Bear sign. I guess by now I think everyone has grown up with him. He's been around for a bit, but I was obsessed with Smokey too.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Is it the shirtless thing or just like you said, a well-intentioned bear?
I think the whole thing is obviously just well-intentioned to try to educate, kids and campers about being careful and to remind you. And, that personification, I think, probably does help. But, I didn't go camping when I was a kid. I was very rarely in any place to possibly start a forest fire. And yet I always had this bear everywhere pointing at me and saying, you, it's your fault. You can stop them. It's your responsibility.
So I had a weird dance with it because, our family would go to Yosemite a lot. That was like our annual family vacation. And, bears are a concern there. We wouldn't do the camping. We'd do the cabins or the lodges. But, you had to go, no food in the car, and there's signs everywhere. So I kind of grew up with a irrational but also rational fear of bears.
Oh, yeah.
And so at the same time, to have a bear on my side, it was confusing. It was like a board telling you to be safe.
Yes, only you can stop your scent from self from being mauled by me. What? This is a confusing safety message. That was very nice to get out of the house and take a walk. And my wife and I had some good relaxing time. Big Frank Sinatra fan, as I've mentioned before. And Saturday was Sinatra's birthday, so my wife and I recorded an episode of my podcast Obsessed about Sinatra and listened to some music and just sat listening to music and having a nice cocktail. That was great. And then my only real Star Wars adventure, besides all of the, the news and the covering, but the more kind of a personal thing, a little while back, I had ordered the vintage figures of Anakin and Obi-Wan from the Clone Wars. And, it's the great, it is the kind of lifelike representation. It's Ewan and Hayden. But it's set in the Clone Wars animated period, and that's the art of the vintage figures, and it says, the Clone Wars. So I ordered those a little while back because I really wanted them, and then gotten this weird thing. It was like I knew they were in these boxes, but I was waiting for the right time to open them. So I figured, hey, look at this announcement, the Obi-Wan show, Hayden's back, I'll open them. And opened them Friday night, after a long, stressful day, and I was finally able to relax. And the Hayden one is really great. I love it. The Anakin one. But the Obi-Wan just blew me away. I think holding it in my hands and seeing that old Kenner vintage art, which is the point of those, but then seeing the Clone Wars, and here's the art on it is just great. Obi-Wan out there with the armor, with the troops, with the Republic gunships landing and his hair's falling out of place. And I had this weird kind of traveling in time moment that you'd think I'd have more often, but I think it's because we talk about Star Wars so much. I just imagine being a kid knowing only that Obi-Wan said he fought in something called the Clone Wars. And I just imagine finding this figure on the shelf as a kid and going, holy crap, we get to see those adventures. It's real. He wore some stormtrooper armor for some reason. He's all beat up. What's going on? And just it just really made me happy to connect those dots and be reminded of how lucky we are to have all of these different eras being filled in.
Yeah. Oh, that resonates with me. And just the, if you could go back and tell yourself,
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine just even seeing like the Anakin, like here's Anakin Skywalker in his prime, just an action figure hanging on the peg. And that's what let you know the stories were coming.
And you didn't even have to mail a weigh board. It was right there, right there in the J.J. Newberry peg wall.
Exactly. So those are my life adventures, getting emotional about Obi-Wan and Smokey the Bear. How about yourself? What were your adventures?
Not as exciting. I'll tell you that. Not as exciting as those two things. Yeah. Hey, you know, another busy week, working on another project that some teases are out there on social. So it's kind of been fun business, but business nonetheless. So that's been going on. And often you and I say our Star Wars adventures sometimes are just what we do to research the show.
Yeah.
Which is awesome, right? It forces Absolutely. You to focus. So you and I have been watching Return of the Jedi. We're going to be doing a scene by scene this week, a very key scene from Return of the Jedi. And I just adore that movie. I love that movie. It represents being seven to me. I mean, it really does. And often, and I'll probably have to do the warning on the scene by scene we're doing this week of, I will probably refer to when I first saw this or when I watched it younger, because this was the greatest. This and Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like, they come on all the time. But it is funny to go back and not through a cynical eye, not through a negative eye, but just look at some of the things in that movie and go, oh, I could only imagine the podcast wars that would have begun over this movie. And how back then, though, it was fun and funny and part of the experience of Star Wars. So what am I? And I'm pretty sure in 5 years you and I've been broadcasting, I'm sure I've mentioned this or you've mentioned it. We discussed it. I was obsessed all the way through high school with the idea that they've got this big planning meeting going on, and Madine's up there, Akbar, Mothma, all these rebel leaders, Ori Marco's there watching, all these things are going on. And Luke walks in and goes, I'm with you too. And then the meeting stops. I've been obsessed with that since a kid. Like, what were they done? Do they have anything more to say? He just walks in. Now everyone's standing up. They're hugging him. They're giving him high fives. What's going on?
So it breaks into a conversation. Yeah.
And I was just watching that. And go on, can you imagine, you know, the think pieces or just the hot takes on all those kind of things. And how, you know, Jedi is not a perfect movie by any sense of the word, but it just is so full of joy, so full of excitement. As our buddy Mark Ellis always says, it's the movie where we won. And that's why he loves it. So it was fun to just kind of see that through the eyes of our research, but also just reminder of a time when we just had fun watching these things. Doesn't mean you can't dig in, and we love to. It doesn't mean you can't be critical at times. We're there with that too, but just another time, another era.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I remember, as we've talked about, you know, people who had, you know, were alive at the right time to have expectations, getting right. cranky about lots of things in Return of the Jedi, you know, but that was the non-viral playground conversations, not the social media think pieces, you know, even though, you know, a big swath of people of a specific age long had grudges and issues, particularly with the Ewoks. But, you know, when I was rewatching the scene that we're going to talk about, but then also just found myself kind of skipping around and watching Return of the Jedi, it was that reminder of, you know, so many people who love that movie. I think they love it because this is the one where we win. You know, Luke is masterful. There's a lot to love about it. And just thinking of all the people who saw it as kids on VHS and streaming and just accepted it as it is because it wasn't, you know, something that they had a bunch of time to build up preconceived notions about. And that's just such a great reminder of, you know, we absolutely can have opinions and should have opinions and should have fun speculating. But going back to that joy of just this is a historical document. You know, that's the way most people are going to encounter Return of the Jedi now. You know, they're not going to go be 10 years old and be rewatching and going, OK, now give me a month in between Empire Strikes Back. I'm going to build up a bunch of expectations and then I'm going to be mad and retroactively say, you know, this is how Richard Marquand failed. You know, it's just not the way people absorb it. It's just, it's a document of history, right? You know, and I think it is powerful to think about it that way because it reminds us that we can choose to embrace the new content that way too.
Yeah, yeah. And we get at these discussions that are often held other places too and here as well. But, going back to the joy of Star Wars and I'm laughing because you invoked the name of Richard Marquand, who, you know, comes in, does a good job holding down the fort with George over his shoulder. But imagine, yeah, the Twitter handles, you know, Richard Mark, no, ruin Marquand. Yeah, I can see it.
Wrecked Marquand. Yeah. Has he even seen Empire?
Oh, God bless it. God
yeah,
bless
it. It is what it is. The eternal battle with our own positivity.
Yeah, but we are positive here, and we got a lot of Star Wars news to get to. Well, when I say a lot, I just mean we're going to dig into the big news. I don't want to say news dump, but it was a big, just a plate of news dropping on your a plate. I'm already talking about food. God, I'm already talking about food. All right, we're going to dive into the Disney Investor Day, following up to that, and I want to start here, Joseph. First of all, nothing tremendously new from that announcement. They didn't sneak in another show, specific details and questions and all that kind of stuff. We haven't really got that yet. There's some things out there. We're going to dive in, though. I want to ask you first, though, after a few days, Joseph, what excites you even more about the news dump or a specific show or about the whole experience?
Yeah, I mean, there are specific shows that I, my mind just floats toward because they reflect my specific, you know, interest in Star Wars. Our tortured buffet metaphor goes on because they're mm-hmm. the dishes that they're the macaroni and cheese, that's a part of Star Wars that I gravitate toward. But I think the biggest thing for me is that it is just really a great collection of styles, because they're going to be different creators, and it looks like they're focusing on different parts of Star Wars, but in particular just different eras. I mean, when you really start to break it down, you know, with the, this is all coming out over a spread of years, right? So it's not like it's all gonna, this is everything that's coming out next year and you'll have to pick then. But you know, the Acolyte happening pre-prequel era, end of High Republic era, you know, you got the Obi-Wan Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, that we know is now going to feature Hayden Christensen as well. So that's going to deal with being in between the prequels and the original trilogy. But I really think that there could be more that anchors it in the prequel era, obviously, since they're going to be wrestling with what happened there. Then with the whole expansion of Mandalorian, we're really going to be, I think, exploring the politics, you know, with Rangers of the New Republic and with Ahsoka, with the, you know, the New Republic right after Return of the Jedi, and how does that maybe morph into the First Order? And then to my reading, I think Patty Jenkins and Taika Waititi's movies are post Rise of Skywalker. So just looking at it from a perspective of eras, I think the thing that excites me the most is just the variety.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. A lot there to choose from. And I'm with you too. Well, there you go. I'm Luke in the briefing room again. I'm with you on the eras. I don't know why, other than vague kind of phrasing of the sentences, but future eras, new eras, all those kind of things with Patty Jenkins and Taika Waititi just makes kind of some sort of sense that they'd find a way to go forward.
Yeah.
Without even, I know a lot of the characters that we would love to see continue, you know, from the sequel trilogy, but even going beyond that and outside those margins. I just have that feeling.
Yeah, and I think it has a relationship with what they're doing with The Mandalorian. You know, obviously, The Mandalorian has had, you know, figures from Star Wars pop up. You know, we have speculation of who will have heard Grogu's call, and who knows, maybe it is going to be Luke Skywalker. Who knows? But right now, The Mandalorian is having fun adventures while we know, you know, Luke, Han, Leia, Lando are out there doing things, too. And I think that has... I think that Lucasfilm is really having this perspective of, yeah, Rey and Finn and Poe and Rose could be doing big, cool, important stuff, but it's a big galaxy and not everything rotates around our main characters. So why couldn't we be having this other high stakes adventure over here? I think it makes sense to embrace how big the galaxy is. And there's a lot in the storytelling lately, I think, that's been leaning toward that on a kind of practical level and a philosophical level, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Taika could go back to, you know, the beginning of time in Star Wars, or maybe his is the Star Wars creation story. I don't know, you know, it could be, but I don't know. I just have that feeling, and it'd be fun to explore, especially with Patty's, you know, and that could send you down a path of you know, who they're going to fight, who's out there. We'll see. But I'm with you. A great use of the Mandalorian, where we are in a world where we know Leia and Luke and Han are sitting around trying to solve problems in the galaxy, and we haven't seen them yet, and it's okay, and you don't feel the loss. It's something new and exciting. Hmm.
Yeah, galaxy's big.
Galaxy's big. Yeah, I found myself just kind of daydreaming a little bit more about the Acolyte. Probably because we don't know quite as much, and we got to assume different era again. About 200 years prior, we'll see. They say at the end of the High Republic era, so maybe even closer. Emerging dark side stuff, everything. I don't know. I'm drawn to that. I will wildly speculate, and I think we already have touched upon it, but some sort of Night Sister character or the Night Sisters involved or something like that. I don't know. The lack of information is just drawing me in, and that great title card. I'm getting more excited for that.
Yeah, yeah. There's something about the way the project's been described. But my mind has always gone to Night Sister, and maybe I'm speculating without responsibility there. But we'll see. We got a great Night Sister question, so we can dive into that a little bit more of our wants, our hopes, our dreams for Night Sisters. I think for the Acolyte, I think given that it's set in such a different time period, I do also think there's hope for this is a totally, you don't need to know anything else. Just come on in for a Star Wars adventure.
Come on in, sit down and have a good Star Wars meal. So I saw this a lot on Facebook. we all have those friends on Facebook or acquaintances or old office buddies, and they're Star Wars fans. They are. And they are. There's no debating that. I will never take that away. But I saw more than five posts this week of, ugh, too much. Too much Star Wars, man. I love it, but this is too much. That's a thought. That's, again, we're not here to take that away. We're here to ask about that. We could joke and say, will there ever be too much Star Wars? But with this amount of information, and I don't hear a lot of people say this about Marvel, but also I'm not clued into that discussion world. Is it too much Enchanted? I don't know. Everyone's excited about Enchanted too. I don't know. So I just want to ask, will there ever be too much Star Wars, or how could it end up being too much? Could you tip it into that the scale going that direction?
Yeah, I guess the question for, too much Star Wars, there's the personal, and then once you get past the personal, what are the larger cultural stakes? Like for the personal, there's the oh, there's too much. I don't have time to absorb it all, and I'm bummed out for myself. You and I are lucky to have a, Star Wars podcast, and I still struggle to absorb all the Star Wars content that I want. So there, I get it from the personal perspective, particularly if people have a specific job or raising kids, and I'm so excited, but I have a hard time making time for everything, and I want to watch everything. I totally get it from that perspective. And I think there's that larger cultural. And I could be wrong, but I think this is a lot of it is coming from people who grew up with the original trilogy. And what they liked about Star Wars was it was so different and special, not just in the content, right? If you go back to being alive in the early 80s, Star Wars they weren't sequels, they were a trilogy. Like, there's those jokes in Scream about the difference between sequels and a planned trilogy. But sequels were still kind of cheap in the 80s, right? If you made... if it was good, you just made another, and didn't matter if you got the same creative people. Here's a Rocky. Here's a Jaws. Here's an Exorcist. And it was the sort of just make that money. That name has money attached to it, so make more. I think was more of a feeling about sequels. And so I think a part of the magic from some people's perspective might have been that Star Wars it made its three movies. And then it went quiet, and it was really special and really rare and really this treat that I think kind of there's something about that that marries well with the mood of Star Wars in general, the original trilogy in particular, that it's romantic and unique and just the tiniest peek into this amazing world. So I think, if there are fans who have internalized that for years and that's their view of what Star Wars is, then I think there's that feeling that if there's too much of it, it's not special anymore, which I understand. I think there's a part of me that would at different times in my life kind of have felt that way. But then on the other side, I just kind of feel like the reality is times change. Content is king right now. And of course, Disney is going to develop more Star Wars. And the plus side of it is this huge amount of variety. And we're in this great place where it's not movie theaters. It's not because, Leslie Headland's making a Night Sister show, if we wanted, we're speculating. It's not like that got the green light. So that's the movie for the next 3 years. And so you don't get other Star Wars going to. Everybody can get something they like. And if you think it's too much, all you have to do is not watch the ones that you're not interested in. And me, I think I think through it lots of different ways, and I see it from the personal. I don't have enough time for it. I see it from the, I liked it when I was, when it was a different time, a different world, and Star Wars felt magical and unique. And now it just feels like it's the thing that's on every corner. It's, you know, it used to be like, you know, a waterfall, and there are only so many in the world and you can go see. And now it's a Starbucks. There's one in every corner. I get that perspective, but at the same time, it's a magical world with a ton of different approaches to it, and a ton of different artists get to have their approach to it, and a ton of different people get to find the part of Star Wars they love. And I think that that part of it is the most powerful and most important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the Welsh Said t-shirt consolation prize there. but I want to start with like the books, and you and I have talked about this on air and off. There's so many wonderful Star Wars books and the novels, the fiction ones, and they come out, and sometimes we read them, but lately over the last year, throw in the comics to this as well. It can feel not like too much, like, oh, it's just overwhelming because we feel maybe professionally we have to keep up on it. And lately I have taken the foot off the gas pedal on the comics. And just like you said, I feel bad being behind on it. And we even get some folks in the Force Center Discord, like, ah, I wish you guys discuss the comics more. We just had to. We had to kind of pull back from that. And gosh, I do kind of feel bad. I do kind of feel bad on that. So it's very personal. The approach, I think it could be. I think you and I and many others love the quality of everything that's come on out. So if there's one or two Star Wars shows a quarter, it could feel a little bit too much. But I just don't think once it happens, I don't think it is. Because once, if you're a Star Wars fan and you love it, and the Lucasfilm logo comes up from whatever era, I think you get excited. And for that moment that you're there, that you're living in it, it isn't too much. It's perfect. It's the perfect amount because it's new Star Wars right in front of you. I was worried about a movie every year. I didn't want two movies a year. I think I was probably on some shows saying that. And then we are in an era, we just wrapped up a movie a year for 5 years, right? Basically. And I there wasn't one part of me that felt that was too much. Again, very personal, very personal. So I understand that slate. You look at it, it's a little cynical, just like, too much. I think when you break it down, and like you said up top, this is over the next few years. I mean, Taika's movie, we believe, is 2025. We got 5 years to wait.
Yeah. So 3 years to Patty Jenkins, another year for Mando season 3. And I think with that one, people are going to be like, I wish it would come sooner because we're invested now. Yeah. And then, you know, Andor is shooting right now, and that's not going to be until 2022, right? And we don't know the release dates of all the others.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a fair question. I get it. It's all about the approach. You know, one of my buddies called me this morning. We were on the phone, and he was like, what do you think about all that pandering Lucasfilm's doing to Star Wars? I'm like, pandering? what are you talking about? I know you and I and many listening here at Force Center are full with joy, and we want to see this stuff. I understand that everyone wants every corner uncovered, and it might tie to what you said. We grew up, many of us, not everyone, because different generations and different entry points in Star Wars. But if you grew up in that era where Star Wars was this thing, you remember that? Remember the early 80s and the 77 film? And we talked about it like it was already, like we were the armor speaking to the Mandalorian. And, you know, times have changed. And I've had several exchanges with other friends this week going, could you imagine, like you and I just said, Joseph, could you imagine in 1988 being told, here, look at all this. Your head would explode. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. And it isn't like television was, you know, in the early 80s where it would have been like you have an adventure and then you reset and that's the way it is. And there's got to be 27 episodes a season. It's, you know, it's very cinematic. It's very artful. Yeah. I think the other thing for me is obviously Disney is wanting to make money on Disney Plus and wanting to sell a few t-shirts and lunch boxes. We'll talk about Mando Monday in a bit, you know, obviously. But it, to me, it just, if you look at this slate, it just, it is still creator driven. It is still Leslie Headland had an idea because she's a Star Wars fan. She went in and made a pitch and they're doing that, you know, and, you know, the Kenobi was, you know, I think the desire to tell this important part of the story with this phenomenal actor who's still interested, Ewan McGregor, and now with Hayden Christensen, like everything, and Patty Jenkins, you know, extreme passion, everything seems to still be coming from a creative point of view, even if there are a lot of creative point of views. Yeah. My Facebook memory today was, what was it 4 years? I think it's 4 years. 4 years ago, where, you know, Screen Junkies had hired me to write some of the jokes that we've all made of what poster should there be for Star Wars stories? You know, yeah. So 4 years ago, so when Rogue One was coming out, the first of the standalone, you know, and it's 4 years gone now, and it's the Gonk Droid and Tatooine Knights about Owen and Brew have their hot and heavy times before they get saddled with Luke. They're fun jokes, and I saw, like, with the announcements, the round of those jokes again. It's almost to me that point of, like, we've been making these jokes about Star Wars being creatively bankrupt, and it hasn't happened, and now our jokes are getting more creatively bankrupt
right
than anything Star Wars has actually produced. And I say that as somebody who wrote some of those jokes and was proud of them, and I still am. They're fun. It's fun and funny. It's Star Wars. But it just, the fear hasn't happened, right? We don't have a Gonk Droid movie.
No. No. And even if we did, we'd probably get a good story. I mean, come on. He's gonking around the galaxy. We need to know.
He's a walking battery. What kind of life is that?
We need to know. We need to know. Let's talk about that Patty Jenkins movie. Got a lot of people excited. The title alone, graphic in her great video, video that she released on Twitter. You and I talked about that. Well, many people, us included, just moved by it because it showed that this is really going to be a personal story, that this wasn't just a hired gun situation. And of Patty, we got this story. You want to do it? It's she's been searching her whole career to get this opportunity, something she's earned, and to tell this story that's related to her father. I think a lot of people were moved by that. There is some stuff out there. I didn't really necessarily pull in. It's not from StarWars.com, so let's take it for what it is. But the stuff out there that this isn't necessarily Rogue Squadron, the video game a lot of people love, and the book series a lot of people love. In fact, even the author of the book series was joking about, oh, hey, my Twitter followers are going up. Disney's using the name of my books for one of their movies. And he actually responded to the Patty Jenkins video very favorably too. So anyways, I wanted to talk about that, about the idea that this is going to be something inspired by the book series, no matter the era, Joseph, whether it's after Jedi or after Rise. And what do we like about that, or what do we don't like about that?
Yeah, I think I'd be fine if Patty Jenkins had said, hey, we got this great tale for, you know, the young New Republic, or we've got this great tale of, you know, the Rogue Squadron's adventures, you know, at this period in the original trilogy. I'd be like, cool, if you're confident and passionate, that's great with me. But I think the statement that it is in a future era of Star Wars storytelling excites me from the perspective of, let's give creators a little bit more of a blank canvas to play with. It excites me from that perspective, like I was saying, of the galaxy being larger. To me, I just think that we kind of need to rewire, you know, ourselves a little bit of, you know, this, the main Star Wars films, the Skywalker saga, really started with these literal galactic stakes, right? Mm-hmm. And as we see from great storytelling, you know, does Mando want to take his helmet off and be a daddy? Can be great, incredibly high stakes, you know? Does this one being live? It can be incredibly high stakes. And I think I'm really interested in, if this is 5 or 10 years after the Rise of Skywalker, and, you know, there's a war between a couple systems, or some pirates are raiding the home planet of somebody involved with Rogue Squadron, you know, or whatever the stakes are that give it emotional weight, to just be able to say stakes can be high in Star Wars without being literally galactic. And that's my hope for this, because everything that Patty Jenkins has been saying about it is the stakes are going to be very high because you're going to care about those characters and you're going to care about whether they live or die. And then another part of, I think, the blurb that maybe other people are talking about, but we haven't talked about as much, Ken, is talks about earning their wings. So this is a coming of age story, which is, right. you know, great Star Wars. If this is, hey, we've got the new Republic or whatever it's called after the Rise of Skywalker. And, you know, tradition has always been that there's a rogue squadron, the best of the best who challenge themselves. Here's this new young generation trying to live up to the legend, and it's live or die, live up to the legend as you try to earn your wings. You know, the stakes could be, does Blast Hoofhoff get into Rogue Squadron, you know?
Yeah. I'm waiting for that character poster.
I don't stand behind that name. That's not a good Star Wars name. But yeah, that's. I think there's a lot there that's old Star Wars and a lot that's new. Who knows where it's going to go?
Yeah, and this is, it's almost crazy for me to already be thinking like, oh, okay, we might be going past 9. Again, might. We're going off of future era. We'll keep repeating that. We don't want to, we don't want to go too far down the path of this is definitely after 9, but a wide open territory, a new way to approach it. And, you know, to not be, listen carefully here tomorrow, not be bogged down by the Force, meaning this is a different kind of Star Wars story. Like I said, the stakes being different, and that's why I'm not worried yet about the villain. You know, I'm not the final order becomes the new final order. I'm not worried about that. I think what I love most about what Patty Jenkins did with the first Wonder Woman. I have not seen 84 yet. I don't know if I can yet. Did it come out yet? No, it's a little
late. December 25th on HBO Max.
Yeah. I have no press links to that one. What I love about that one is someone who is, familiar with superheroes, roots for them, but didn't live in that world growing up and still doesn't. I love the first act and second act of that movie. You know, third act is great. It's big. It's superhero, you know, fights and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying I don't like that as well, but I like Wonder Woman in a new world or Wonder Woman discovering, you know, herself. That look, I think she got me so invested in that character, a character I've known literally my entire life, and I was around to see Linda Carter on TV the first spin and turned into the Wonder Woman. So I think if she can bring that, no matter the era, like you said, it will be able to get into those cockpits, and she's got the legacy of her father in her heart to tell. So I'm excited about that, and like that it won't be holden to this has to happen because this book series said it.
Yeah, I think that is what I'm excited about. I think that you can do lots of storytelling without cutting off future storytelling possibilities if you go after the Rise of Skywalker. And you're right. I think we should have some caution. I think I am drawn to that because it makes sense to me to say future era of storytelling. But maybe what they mean is they're carving out, hey, here's some time when the New Republic was around and maybe a couple of Luke's Jedi trainees were running around, and it is the pre-sequel, the great new pre-sequel era. You know, that is absolutely a possibility. And I trust that whatever they're doing, they're doing it with a good idea of what makes it powerful for the characters that we're following. And mm-hmm. that's the most important thing to me. Yeah. And then on an only partially related note, I love Wonder Woman because of how much, many reasons, but Patty Jenkins does such a great job of making the action powerful and having the character beats absolutely tied to the action scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think the third act is underrated. People mm-hmm. criticize the third act often. There are specific beats and moments where all of the thematic ideas come together. It is, in my opinion, not just a generic superhero fight, big superhero fight at the end. It is where everything comes together, in my opinion.
Oh, no, I'll trust you. Believe me, I'll trust you on that. I always go to my buddy Matt Key. And did you enjoy it? Yeah. Okay. Then I'll trust that you enjoyed it. I just, that's from my upbringing there. But it works. It works because of what she established in that film and has, worked really long and hard to get these opportunities. Too long. And I'm excited to have her in the Star Wars world. I want to, we could literally do another hour on this Investors Day, a news thing. I mean, you and I haven't, we're going to need to do Vader, Obi-Wan one more time.
Many more times. And Ahsoka. We've barely talked about Ahsoka, which would normally be, that would be a whole meal worth of news for weeks. Yes.
And I have had, it's so funny going to the Obi-Wan Vader one and the Hayden Christensen back. It has been a tale of two reactions all through these last few days for me. I'm sure it's probably similar for you. I joked on the show. I told Grace, my girlfriend, about it, and she got weak in the knees and was like, her dreams have come true. Hayden is back. Like, just loves it. My old pal, Roxy Stryer, she's been on the Hayden is great as Vader since my Jedi Alliance days when I brought her and Sarah Stretton on the show to defend Hayden when I was a little bit snarky. And then the other time I've had the same friend call me up and be like, how could they do that? And then another friend, I was talking to him, and then his wife is in the background going, but he was bad, right? Didn't we all agree that he was bad? Why would we want him back? And all our great opinions and all our own journeys through Star Wars, but it's been such a interesting thing. But I wanted to specifically, I don't know. And again, I don't know if you felt that too, if you've been getting texts from all sides of the coin, Joseph.
No, I've definitely been seeing the strong opinions on Facebook back and forth, you know. And I'm so excited because I think he does a great job in the prequels. There are a couple beats that I disagree with, but I think it is more about, for me, Lucas not always, you know, wanting to talk to actors. I feel that in some moments where, like, is that really, you know, we've talked about it before, wanting a little bit, for me, you know, as somebody who absolutely loves the prequels and have come to love Hayden's performance even more, of wanting a few more moments of the hero, you know, rather than the guy falling apart, so that we could heighten that that contrast. And I'm really excited to have him back to I think prove to the world that he is a really good actor, and he's going to bring a lot of nuance, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And stay tuned for part 8 of Joseph and Ken talking about their relationship and what they get. One I wanted to highlight, you and I talked about this off air, I think, last week, and we're like, we got to get on the air and have this. I want to speculate wildly a little bit about who will comprise the Rangers of the New Republic. We haven't really talked about this series a lot. We do not know any specifics. Yes, there was other rumored spinoff shows, Bo-Katan, Cara Dune, and maybe this is that, maybe it isn't, maybe that's folded into Ahsoka. We don't know that right now. And that those are two candidates to comprise these quote-unquote Rangers of the New Republic. I'm just going to start here, Joseph. We both kind of now are putting into the Force Center book of records that we really would love to see Iden Versio and Shriv.
Yes. So you were telling me about the Iden Versio conversation happening with the actor, right? And then I was like, Shriv, come on.
I want to give you full Shriv credit. Yeah, no, it was Mitch Dyer, the writer, one of the writers of it. And he tweeted, I haven't seen, while we're chatting, I'll look up Janina's feed. But he was just kind of like, you know, who would be a great teacher for these Rangers 5 years after she turned to the rebellion there? Iden Versio and Janina Gavankar. I want to talk about, a performer who could easily make the transition from animated video game character to live action. I think she's all there for it. And Shriv, Duros, it's easy. We've seen Duros on screens. So let's do it.
Yeah, no. And I think now that we have had almost two full with one episode to go, successful seasons of a show that is all based on a person with a mask who does not move, I think we have, you know, Shriv can emote just fine.
Shriv can absolutely emote and is a character that has, Shriv has fans, absolutely has fans. But I think he could get, I think he's been forgotten. And for the record, going to Janina's Twitter, not officially mention it. She
okay. My apologies. That came from the writer, not the.
Oh no! Yeah, no. That's fine. I just want to make sure because I want to see. I want to see if she's saying something. But she's. She also doesn't tweet a ton, at least right now, not lately. So, anyways, don't worry, folks. We'll monitor Janina's Twitter feed. But you know what I mean. Like Shriv's been a little forgotten.
Yeah, let's not forget about Shriv. We were all about Shriv for a little while, and then, you know, he faded. He's just a great comic character, I think, that had a different energy, just great delivery by the actor, Dan Donahue. And I think just that, like, that character who's like, I'm committed to the rebellion. I'm going to do this, but I'm also just going to be really honest. This sucks.
Mm-hmm.
This sucks that we have to fight a war. A lot of other things I'd prefer doing. In that combination of somebody who is clearly good-hearted, clearly on the side of light, but is also grumpy about it, is, you know, really attractive for some reason. I don't know why.
I love it. I love it. Do you have any other thoughts on making up this wild Rangers team?
Well, I think, you know, there's an interest to me, you know, even Shriv is obviously a pilot, you know, so is Aiden. I think so is Carson Teva. But so Rangers is interesting to me. Is that like really specifically not pilots, but rather, you know, drop troopers like Cara Dune, or if that is that distinction unimportant? I think the biggest thing to me about it that's exciting is the groundwork they've laid with Carson Teva in the relationship to the Outer Rim. And I think there's something about Rangers, right? That makes me feel like we know the kind of canon story is Mon Mothma feels like we need to really power down. We can't have a big military. We need to show the galaxy that we are different than the Empire. We can't show a fist to the galaxy or we'll get a fist back. And I like that philosophically. I'm really interested in the like small band who's like, got it, Mon Mothma, but there are problems. Can we be this little unit that, you know, really believes that we don't want violence either, but we do really believe in justice. We believe in taking care of people and we believe in being proactive. Can we just be this little band who goes places, you know, the kind of the forgotten places, the out on the rim places, and take care of business? That's really interesting to me from a sort of philosophical point of view.
Yeah. And how, yeah, just the hows and whys of settling it, so to speak. And does it need settling? Does it, you know, what, how do you just maybe just pull it in the fold? This idea, because we definitely, yeah, you, you kind of associate with law enforcement to a certain degree, this Rangers, Texas Rangers, Walker, Texas Ranger, Chuck Norris is in the series. Well, just like you said, you mentioned Carson Teva, and Teva's definitely on my list of someone who I definitely want to see in this show. I've obviously been joking on the Mando report of when is the New Republic going to pay attention to the people running around in stormtrooper outfits? And it seems like some people will be, and which of course makes sense. So to have that, and it, since it might culminate in a crossover event, however you want to refer to it, I'm intrigued by exactly what you're saying is it's not just going out and fighting. It's helping to establish a better galaxy. And it's just naturally going to be full of a lot of obstacles, which is one of the things I love so much about the new modern era of canon. The Ewoks dance, the fireworks exploded, and then we really had to get to work, and it wasn't easy. That just, it just creates a lot of opportunity for storytelling.
Yeah, I think that there's also this possibility, especially since Dave Filoni, I'm obsessed with Shriv, Dave Filoni, Jon Favreau, Favreau seemed to be really interested. He talked about it a lot. It was in the early promo for The Mandalorian of like the New Republic isn't fully formed and they're dropping the ball and it's chaos, right? But then we're getting these things, I think, from Filoni, who is maybe, I'm guessing, who is a little bit more, you know, got a handle on the all the big picture canon of like, yeah, but they're trying and there's reasons and all that. That I wonder if putting Ahsoka and Rangers of the New Republic together, you know, letting Mando kind of encounter some of these things, but then go on his own journey. But if it becomes a little bit of like, this is kind of the big picture on-screen story of how the New Republic thought they really, really put out all of the embers of the Empire and how they missed the creation of the First Order. Like, if this is going to be sort of justice for the New Republic, but also the tragedy of like, and this is how they missed truly stopping it.
Right, right. Yeah, that's something there I like. Here's, you know, I think we got Aiden. I think Aiden's a candidate for a leader, but I know the Ahsoka series would be a good spot, but since it's all possibly intertwined, give me Hera here. She needs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, Hera and Jason. There we go. Finally.
Just the spot for Jason Syndulla. Yeah.
I mean, so serious question for you. I did think about Hera. If Rangers of the New Republic is a Hera show. And then the Ahsoka show is Ahsoka and Sabine looking for Ezra. Is that just an FU to Zeb? And B, is that for you just now it's live action Rebels?
It is. And that's a good way to maybe kind of wrap up this discussion on it. Is that a bad thing? And I don't think it's a bad thing. Yes, Chopper and Zev. All right, add them in. Chopper is the Ranger of the New Republic. I totally want to do it.
They just didn't want to call the show Chopper, but he is the Ranger of the New Republic.
And I know Zev and Kallus go on a little mission. We get time. Kallus and Zev can come back. Throw them all in there, okay? I am both okay with the idea of this is the Rebels sequel we got, but also I did so just really come to love Rebels. Really powerful. And I like this kind of new tradition with the Clone Wars Rebels Resistance of an animated series. We got Bad Batch. I know, but I kind of still want to see something in animation. And I don't want that to sound like, you know, taking Ahsoka back for Ashley Eckstein, but I would like to see her get that chance. Maybe a bigger discussion, but I wouldn't feel cheated, Joseph, but I just really wouldn't mind if some of it continues in animation.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, I can't wait to hear more about these as they develop, like, you know, when they're going to come out and things like that.
Yeah. When's that? And then, you know, then we find out Patty Jenkins' movie happens the week after Yavin 4. So yeah, we'll find out. Hey, final news. Well, we had a couple. We got there. We'll always do our Mando Mondays check. But I did want to discuss this. This is something that's, equally as important to you and I and many people listening here, Joseph, is we've been meeting a lot of the characters of the High Republic, but meet the vehicles of the High Republic. Some of them. Some ships and vehicles revealed on StarWars.com. And Pablo Hidalgo had a lot to do with this. Phil Stostak, a lot of the great creatives up there. Working behind the scenes with concept art and designs. Pablo explained the kind of a theme for the used designs, because a lot of them are taken from designs not used for the films in the last 5 years. Taken as a whole, the prequels track the march from handcrafted artisan technology to machine-stamped assembly line tech. So given we're dialing the clock to before episode one, there were a lot of design explorations that had that delicate, streamlined feel that felt relevant looking back at some of the old designs. So what do you feel about that in general and this idea of, yeah, you kind of do have to, the era matters when you're designing vehicles, ships.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's one of the things that has always given some magic to Star Wars is that it all looks cool. It goes back to that sort of lived in idea, you know, and then when the prequels came out, I think, you know, some people who grew up with the original trilogy, that was one of the things that bumped for them, is they loved that lived in look and, you know, didn't kind of get this idea or didn't like this idea that, no, the galaxy is in just better shape. You know, people actually have, there are artisans who are not imprisoned and people have, you know, more money because things are going well for everybody. Didn't like that idea. But I think if it's the lived in look that you love of the Falcon, or if it's the just sleek, amazing design of the, you know, N1 Naboo Starfighter, I think the fact that things in Star Wars don't just look cool, they look cool for a storytelling, world building reason, is one of the big aesthetic strengths of Star Wars. It's why I think when you look at a bunch of knockoffs that came out, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, look generic compared to Star Wars, because it's not just that, you know, Ralph McQuarrie was amazing, absolutely, but you know, it's because their designs are storytelling too.
Yeah,
that give them power.
Absolutely. What do you feel about these? The Jedi Vector Starship. This is originally a clone fighter design, a Republic clone fighter design. This to me is kind of the headline. I think we got ourselves a sexy ship. I know you're a big fan of the Jedi Starfighters, both versions in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So, Joseph, you excited about the Jedi Vector?
Oh, yeah. I just love saying it. I don't know why I want Dexter Jetster to say it. There's something about it that you almost leaned into your Dexter impression there, the way you said it. It's just the Jedi Vector is so cool. Such a cool name. And yeah, I love the design. It does. It looks like it has a philosophical connection to the two designs that we see in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And I like that it is lean and specific. It looks like they're flying a lightsaber, right? It mm-hmm. looks like it is sharp and blunt and to the point, and it's meant to just carry a Jedi.
Yeah.
And just like, I am enough by myself. I'm going someplace to do a thing, and I am projecting power and precision and elegance.
Yeah, a little astromech droid in the back there. You know, we're going to get to meet so many astromech droids possibly here. Yeah, Pablo describes it as a very insectile, slim and delicate, but with a definite sting. Ooh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I like the sting.
I like the sting. The Nile, the bad guys they got to ship to, these are actually mostly original to the High Republic, meaning they designed them specifically for it. And it's interesting, when I was reading this article, I was like, wow, that's interesting. We're going to get the vehicles from the novels so we can imagine them. And I was like, dummy, there's comics. Don't forget. It's going to be a lot of things coming. I like these ships a lot. These look like, you know, the Nile are marauders, brutal savages, how they're described. I look at these and they remind me of like a G.I. Joe toy. Like if you were to buy the Dreadnoughts, Zartan's side group out in the swamps, eating grape soda and chocolate donuts. I really am. I'm not rooting for the Nile here, but I did a summer project. So busy and messy and ugly, but elegant in the brutality. I don't know. I'll throw a bunch of poem words at the wall there. I just like it. I don't know. I'm intrigued by what we got here. A little Mad Maxy as well.
Yeah, I think definitely Mad Maxy in a great way. And I think kind of from that same philosophy, right, of they want to project power and brutality. And, you know, look, this looks like a villain that comes from the perspective that size does matter. And then it also speaks to, like, we've stolen all this stuff. And, you know, and we've just slapped it on in the most aggressive way possible.
Yeah, right. Right. Final two ones we reveal for this one here is we got a Republic long beam, which is could actually be seen in the Art of the Last Jedi. It was a resistance bomber kind of concept. And then we have the Legacy Run, kind of a freighter ship that was a design for Han Solo's freighter in The Force Awakens. They went in a different direction with the Irvana. But these two designs here, I like them. I had a thought of like, you know, does it lessen it because it's just hey, let's take what was left on the drawing board. Then I thought, no, that's also a lot of Star Wars. Like before and big team back in the day designed a lot of things and well, repurpose them, aliens too and creatures. So I like that kind of spirit. I like what we got going here with these two ships.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I liked in this article. I believe Phil Sostak tweeted and hey. This is great information about the High Republic, but if you also want to get a better sense of what my actual job is, read this. I really love the quotes about like how he had put together a sort of lookbook of everything that hasn't been used and talked about the 3-second rule of just how quickly does it speak to you? And that's just such a great way to approach design, especially like you've got all these accomplished Star Wars designers, you know, like in general, the design is going to be good, but in 3 seconds, does it speak to you? And does it speak to you for a specific era? I thought was a really cool detail in the article.
Yeah. 3-second rule, not just for food dropped on the ground. I love that there. No, great stuff. Yeah. Feels great. Always just a great Twitter follow because there's a lot of great information and insight into the creative process behind a lot of these concepts and ships and vehicles and characters that we love. Final thing, the Starlight Beacon, which I do believe seen a little bit of this before, but I love a little bit more of what we got in terms of the description. This, of course, is going to be very key to the High Republic series. This is kind of a little space station out there. And the concept has a Jedi Temple inspired top. It does kind of look like the pyre of the Jedi Temple we're familiar with. And then a kind of an industrial foundation on the underside. Pablo Hidalgo said, those who are allied to the ideals of the Republic can look at it as an inspiration, example of balance, of working together. Those against the Republic can get riled up by what they see as a statement of class and divisions. There's a lot going on there. Absolutely. You talked about it, Joseph. That is storytelling and design. And this is a real simple, easy to grasp concept, but I want to spend some time on the Starlight Beacon.
Yeah, I love the design it is, and I love that description. That's such a just great, from a certain point of view, extends to people's strong feelings about architectural design and what they mean for the morality of the Jedi and the High Republic.
Yeah, maybe consequences and unintended consequences and where that will go. That's fascinating. This also looks like just a spectacular casino in the new parts of Vegas. It looks like an Aria, and I want to go there for that as well. So there you go. Statements of class and division, even there. Final update quickly. Mando Monday. Oh, also, by the way, something I saw this morning. There will be a High Republic live stream event coming January 4th, 2021. It'll be on StarWars.com. A lot of the authors, Claudia Gray, Daniel Jose Older, Kevin Scott, Charles Soule, Justina Ireland, and more. Kristen Baver, Michael Soglin of Lucasfilm Publishing and StarWars.com will be there as well to kind of just share some fresh insights in the characters and the events and just kind of get us all excited for what is coming with the High Republic era. So we, of course, update you on that and cover it as well. Mando Mondays, we always like to go into that because there's probably something we want to buy. And this week is no different. We have got some highlights, and I've seen some other Black Series figures out there, but the big highlight is Bo-Katan. We got Bo-Katan, Kree's, the Katie Sackhoff live-action version of this character. It looks great. So happy for Katie to get a Star Wars figure. Man, that's always a thing. So I've kind of stopped collecting Black Series for storage and allowance money reasons. This Jar Jar, there's a lot coming that I'm just going to have to add and throw in a box, but add indeed.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to get Bo-Katan, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying not to. I am having a lot of time restraining myself from making more action figure purchases. Yeah. But Bo-Katan is really cool because the character is so beloved. And it's also just, you know, that's an action figure of the character, but it's also an action figure of that cool moment where this person got to jump from animation to live action. And here it is in action figure form. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Bold, bright action figure design and color there. They got the Child Hideaway Hover Pram plush from Hasbro. Oh, this is going to be a need to add to cart. It's no, this is going to be, I'm going to turn the corner at a store one day in the toy aisle, like I always do. And I know you do as well. And if this is there, I'm just going to be like, screw it, I'm buying this. it's a 3-in-1 toy that converts from the egg-like hover pram to the child. Even better.
So you can hide the child.
Yeah. We also got some watches. I don't keep time on a timepiece anymore, but these do look beautiful. And some art. We got that. We get the Sims free play Mando event. You can go to StarWars.com, check it out. We don't just want to list off everything there. And then they always do the digital downloads with some concept art, character posters. And we did get a FedEx Shan poster, which a lot of people wanted last week. And hey, here it is for you this week. And so glad she's still in the show and factoring into the show, hopefully even more. So great design on that one as well.
Yeah. And the Mando, the Mondo posters of Mando that came out on Mando Monday posters look very cool too.
There you go. I'll get the plush, you get the posters. I'll meet you at the checkout. There you go. All right, that is a look at Star Wars news and just kind of looking back on a big week for Star Wars news and fans. Before we take a quick break and reset and get to your questions, we're gonna do our audiobook recommendation. Joseph, we got a big one here today.
That's right. We are recommending the Rise of Skywalker novelization. I think it is a great read. I think if there are fans who are still like, I want to know more. This one came to mind because, we've talked about Palpatine's return recently on last week's deep dive show on Thursday. And I think if people want to get, some more insights, Rise of Skywalker novelization is really, really great. It's got some great moments that I think add to the film.
I agree. Download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. And here we go. We're taking a quick break here on Force Center. On the other side, we got some great questions from you, listening audience. See you soon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to Force Center. We've done the news. It's time for the cues. Joseph, what do we got this week?
Yeah, we got great questions from Twitter and our patrons on Patreon. As always, our first question comes from Twitter. It's a Kane J. Martin. Hello, Kane. Kane says, hey, guys. Ever since seeing them in Clone Wars, I've been a big fan of the Night Sisters. When Meron popped up in Fallen Order, my hope of seeing more of them was reignited. I would love to see them show up in live action, but I know it might not work for the casual Star Wars fan. What kind of future Star Wars media would you like them to show up in? Movie, show, video game, etc. Thanks for all the great discussion, and may the Force be with you. All right, great question from Kane. I believe this was, you know, sent in before the announcement, and, you know, I don't think everyone in the world is looking at the Acolyte and going, of course, Night Sister. That's just an obsession we have for some reason. Mm-hmm. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, that possibility. That's definitely a television show. Where else do you go with wanting to see Night Sisters, Ken?
I wouldn't mind if you got a real good novel about it. And the reason I say that is the Dark Disciple stuff with Asajj and Christy Golden kind of taking you a little bit into her life and things there. Some of the stuff later on the Clone Wars, Rebels, right? They go back to with Maul.
Maul's little cave there.
Yeah, I like a lot of that there. And I think it deserves more storytelling because it's a different concept. It's one that I think I never would have just immediately associated with Star Wars, witches, right? But it does make sense, no matter what your view of what witches are or aren't, you know. You immediately think of the Wicked Witch of the West or something. I don't know what that word evokes is different in all of us, but it works so well for me. Mother Talzin is a character that I want to know more, and I want to know their views of the Force and how they use it. And I guess I'd call them dark side, but I don't necessarily think that's even fair. However, you know, Maren comes along and is this great character that also ties into the theme of trauma, recovering from trauma, which is one of the reasons a lot of people love the Fallen Order story, us included. So there's a character that it's already turning your head on what you think a Night Sister is in Star Wars. That's why I think there deserves to be more. And as far as Leslie Headland, like I could see that series being that. It has that vision of it, an acolyte and kind of the fantasy, that's kind of a fantasy term in a way that a lot of people would associate with a fantasy series and the emerging dark powers. It's all there. I don't want to lock myself into that expectation, but I just would love to explore that side of the Star Wars story.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different things I'm excited about with a Night Sisters show. I'd be happy to get, you know, a book or a video game or anything Night Sisters, but I would love a television show so they could kind of be brought to a wider audience. I get where Kane is coming from to say, maybe they would be difficult to explain for a casual Star Wars audience. But I think that only really becomes a problem if you're trying to explain all of the Night Sisters canon that has come before. But if you're just trying to understand the idea of what a Night Sister is, I think you can introduce that to a brand new audience pretty quickly of, hey, this is a group of Force users who look at the Force differently, who use the Force differently. They don't just process it through themselves the way Jedi and Sith seem to, but they have a relationship to it through the planet, through different items and magics, and also through themselves. And it's this fun, different take on the use of Force in a different perspective. I also think the Night Sisters are just kind of one of the best examples of what Star Wars can be in terms of just an idea, in that they're such a classic Lucas thing of Lucas always from Star Wars when he was involved, and now new creators look at other bits of storytelling or ideas from pop sources, pop culture sources, genre sources, mythic sources. And the Night Sisters are one part, like, spooky witch, like really Halloween creepy horror movie, the way Mother Talzin's voice is doubled and it's all spooky creepy on a misty red planet. But they also get into these big important cultural stuff with witches in real life. Of there's that pop culture Halloween witch that's being talked about, but then there's also that idea of the witch as a symbol of women having power and times in the real world where men have used that label witch to say, we recognize that a woman has power and we don't want that. We want to label it and somehow vilify it. And that even happens in the Clone Wars when Palpatine's like, I got all my chess pieces. I'm going to move them all in place. This is the way it's going to be. I don't need anybody in my way. I'm afraid of those women on that planet who have that power. They can't be here, so wipe them out. So I'd love Night Sister to be taken to the wider public on screen, because I think they're such a great idea in playing with the genre fun, but also the deep ideas of what does witch mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what does it mean to us? What does it mean to Star Wars? How do they get there? And again, it could be early on. Just listening to you talk, I'm like, wow, I'd love to see Leslie Headland dive into that. And again, it might not be, but now as often here in Force Center, you've got me excited for something just regardless of where it shows up.
Yeah, I'm just excited to rewatch all the Night Sister stuff in the Clone Wars.
It's underrated in a sense, and I say that to myself. Like, again, it was easy to overlook. Witches, I don't even know. Go to it. The Asajj Ventress stuff is really powerful, and the point you made there about Palpatine, like, I need them gone. Big stuff there, too. So they're a great part of it. It really worked.
Yeah, and a lot of great creatives contributed to it, and it's great to celebrate their work, too. Great question, Kane. We're going to move on to our next question from Warren Heaney. Warren says, do you think Padme really loved Anakin? It started as a work trip dalliance. They're about to be executed, so she says she loves him. They survive, but she can't break up now. His mom just died, he has a temper, and just killed some kids. I think Warren is asking from a point of view of humor, a humorous point of view, about all the things that from the outside at a glance, there's some not healthy stuff going on in the Padme and Anakin relationship. But what do you think about this, Ken, about Padme's true feelings about Anakin and how she dealt with some of these things that in the real world, I think we would call warning signs.
Yeah. There's definitely a strand of humor in this question. And there's also an actual asking of this. And look, there's two people I'd love to call right now. I'd love to see if Jennifer Landa was available. I know for the schedule, but I'd love to get her perspective. But I'd love to call E.K. Johnston. I don't have her number. But this is why I want a third, maybe more than three, but a third Padme book that goes up and through and into Revenge of the Sith. You and I have talked often about wanting to – we can accept the story to a certain point of view, what happened to Padme. She is underserved 100%. But we can, all right, it's part of the Star Wars story. Let's try to dive into what it means. But I'd love to just love to be inside Padme's brain. I say love because it's probably bittersweet. It's a dark time for the character. I think there's some truth to what Ward said and just, you know, hey, it started passion, all those kind of things. But you and I have mentioned this before. And again, I don't want to sound like I have any idea of what's going on inside the head of a female character in a troubled relationship. But from an outsider perspective, I think there's some truth to she loves him, number one. And two, it is troubled. And there is a part of her allowing herself to have this when she's a queen and a senator. And does that send her down a wrong path? And then how can she turn back? It's some serious questions about a troubled relationship. But I think at the end of the day, she loves him, loves what he could be, and loves who he was, not just a young boy she met, but just, you know, loves the knight that's there, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, I have certainly made my fair share of jokes, coming right out of Attack of the Clones about, you know, here's the dubious dating choices that have been made by both Anakin and Padme. So I get having a sense of humor about it. But, you know, I've really been appreciating Padme more and more as I rewatch the prequels and really listen to exactly what she says and exactly what she does and why and take it as it is. In my interpretation of the big picture of the character, and this is just me, you know, spewing my headcanon, and as you say, maybe E.K. Johnston will come along and write it really, really well. But for my headcanon, I think she absolutely did love him. I think she loved everything that was truly good about him, that he's brave. He is driven. He is very, very compassionate. He cares about others. And she saw this in him from the first time that she met him, that he wants to help other people. We talk a lot about how Anakin fell by letting his love become selfish, that letting his love not become about celebrating this other wonderful person in his life, but being consumed by his own fear of losing them. So it became a selfish kind of love of not seeing Padme as a person to be loved, but as somebody to lose that he needs to hold on to. But on the flip side of that, I think Padme sees the beginning of that, of this incredibly compassionate guy who maybe wants to bend Jedi rules because he loves people and he wants to help them selflessly and keep them safe, from random people he meets during the Clone Wars to Ahsoka to Padme herself, to Padme sees his love of Obi-Wan, even though that they have this cantankerous relationship. Padme can see that truth. So I think she sees what's great about Anakin. And I think this is the story of two young people, and Anakin's pretty hot. And yeah. I think that's, you know, there is, you know, an actual just attraction there. And I think the great part of Padme's story about when she says, you know, I truly, madly, deeply love you, and the circumstance about possibly losing their lives, I think it's just this great story of somebody who is really, really taking responsibility and leadership seriously. She was a queen at a young age. Then she's a political leader, and she puts the weight of the galaxy on her shoulders. Everything in Attack of the Clones is motivated by her feeling like, everything will get worse if we start an army, and I'm going to do everything possible for the sake of the entire galaxy. And somebody who doesn't let herself pursue her own kind of interpersonal needs. And I think being pushed to that pressure point of like, I am constantly, people are trying to murder me, and I'm just going to give in and let myself express this other side of myself and fall in love with this guy. And then I think, you know, if things had turned out differently and they hadn't plunged into the Clone Wars, I can see Padme being like, okay, the secret marriage thing is not good. Let's tell everybody. Let's deal with the consequences, and let's, you know, choose our love, and find a way to make it work. But the Clone Wars happened. She's got all this responsibility on her shoulders. So does he. And I think she's got that perspective of like, yep, this can't go on this way forever, but we'll deal with it eventually.
Yeah, I think there's such great inspiration to be taken from Padme. And that can also, you can also take some of those comments and struggles and even her failures, but also looking at it from what you're talking about in Attack of the Clones moment, declaration of love at the end. There's a little bit to me of just kind of a system in a way that is, told her you can't do this anyways. You have been chosen to rule. You're great at ruling and leading and all those kind of things. But you know, therefore you can't be a complete person. You can't also love. And it's similar to what Anakin's going through, right? And if you and I always love the idea, you're the leader of the Justice for the Jedi campaign. So, but if the Jedi Order hadn't said this is a bad thing, not just attachment, but marriage. I mean, in the larger Star Wars story, I still look back and go, what did you think was going to happen when you sent Anakin on a secret mission with her? Like, come on. You seen them both? Like, come on. Obi-Wan, you know, Satine, come on. So there's that. That's the fun part of the Star Wars story. But I think I look at some of what Padme had to go through with those kind of pressures in this era, this Republic thing of that might have been looked down upon, like, oh, you're a queen, you're a senator, and now you want to fall in love and get pregnant and give it all up. Like, that's not fair. That's not fair. So she wasn't allowed to express it before that moment.
Yeah.
And that's something to learn from the situation too.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, she can feel a real connection with that conversation that they have on the refugee ship on the way to Naboo is really all about this idea of the difference between loving and having compassion for everyone as an idea versus having compassion and love for a specific person. You know, she's kind of asking Anakin, and it's exposition. He's kind of laying out exactly what the Jedi rule is and why, and kind of trying to dance around it.
Yeah.
But it also makes a lot of sense from her perspective of that's kind of the position she's in too, of marriage isn't forbidden, but you know, it's complicated. You know, and we get that question too of like, why is it a problem for her? And like, oh, she, you know, she's in the government, and the Jedi up to a point serve the government, and that gets complicated real quick.
Yeah. Man, Ike, we need that book. Someone, Luke, come on, make this happen.
Yeah.
Sure, want to write it if she isn't already.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love that book. It's a great question, Warren. I think it is. This is one of those real points in the prequels that people have strong opinions about, and you can look at it with depth, and you can look at it with a sense of humor, and it's fine to have both points of view, I think. Moving on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First one comes from Mac. Mac says, what do y'all think is a very historically important line exchange that is extremely overlooked for its importance? I think when Palpatine tells Vader that he killed Padme, that doesn't get nearly enough attention, which I know has a lot to do with the weirdness of hearing James Earl Jones say Padme, and of course the much maligned no. To me, though, him telling Vader that he killed Padme is incredibly important because it's really that one last little twist of the knife to fully transform Anakin into the Darth Vader we know. You guys have no idea how much I love all your shows and how much they mean to me, especially when times are tough. So genuinely, thank you. Thank you, Mac. Thank you for the kind words, and thank you for sharing the fun questions and the fun thoughts. Ken, first off, do you agree with Mac that that's an overanalyzed line? or an underanalyzed line. Excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. And I know in the years you and I have discussed the prequels and Jennifer as well, this has come up. And I was there in 05 going, what? No. And then it's just the moment has grown on me. The you lay it all down on a map, on an emotional map of Anakin, Vader, and the Emperor. And this moment really works for me. I now really love this moment, even with the awkwardness. And there's still some awkwardness to it. No doubts there. I view it as Palpatine kind of nailing, it's the final nail in the coffin that is around Anakin. It is this, turns out you killed her.
And
boom, and Anakin's locked in, and that fuels his rage. He now hates himself even more, and he hates this, and he hates the system. He hates the things we were just talking about. If I only been allowed to love her, and all those kind of things, and it's the lie that holds it all together until it doesn't anymore, and that's why it really, really, really tracks for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think everything you're saying makes a ton of sense. I think those follow-up lines of, no, she was alive, I felt her, is really great too, because it's his first steps into being, the fully formed Vader, where he's immediately having to doubt his own beliefs. And like, it's almost like the fact that he felt her and she was alive and Palpatine saying no, it's almost like this, he could trust himself. He could go, I gotta, check on this right then. But he immediately falls to just the, you will accept the darkest truth. You will accept what I say as truth,
Yeah.
So it's about that. And it's about, his just the absolute, it really drives home the tragedy of Revenge of the Sith, of the idea that his desperation to avoid something that might happen could have caused it to happen. It really is this sort of button on that, traditional tragic story, structure of a tragedy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So other part of Mac's great question, Ken, for you, do you feel like there are other lines that we should be analyzing more?
I was be honest, I was gonna have some fun and the whole, what is she proposing of it all? but I think it's one that's become just so much, it's just really powerful to me. And I've mentioned a lot because I think about a lot of just, Luke to Yoda, what's in there, and Yoda, only what you take with you. I just have that's a fandom philosophy. That's kind of a life philosophy. There's room to discuss things around it. It's not concrete. I think it's one of the more powerful Star Wars lessons, and people are aware of that. It's not like some obscure line. But I think in that entire sequence, there's a lot being presented in that. And that is just, it's really important. And it's really important for Luke, the character of Luke. I think there was I really love from a certain point of view, Empire story, of the cave's perspective of the, I'm paraphrasing, but the line that you and I discussed of looking at Luke and going, he's always looking for a reason to use those lightsabers. And that's a pretty powerful thing and part of the Star Wars story and the Star Wars philosophy. So that line, again, it's a line we've all grown up with, but that often means it becomes wallpaper, becomes something you see every day when you walk into the room. And I think it bears a closer look.
Yeah. And I think there are those lines too, where we watch it and we see it from Yoda's perspective. We see the flaw that it's being talked about with Luke, but sometimes we don't kind of extrapolate out to the other characters in Star Wars, the other ideas in Star Wars, or if we want to take that as a life lesson for ourselves, what does that mean for us? When you sign on to Twitter in the morning, what's on Twitter? Only what you take with you.
Yeah.
Can be a lesson if you want of, the way you approach things is going to have an effect on them. So I think that's really powerful. Another one of the Yoda ones that comes up a lot for me in Empire Strikes Back that I think, it's the way you describe it as wallpaper is really great. You must unlearn what you have learned. Mm-hmm. I think that is so powerful from artistic pursuits, from the way we can make assumptions about things. I think in the movie, it's clear that, what's being said is Luke has a view of how the galaxy works from the, you know, a Jedi is a warrior. Oh, you got to unlearn that. Oh, it's easy to move rocks because they're small, but X-Wings can't be moved because they're big, period. And, you know, Yoda is literally saying you have to unlearn what you have learned and see the galaxy from a different perspective. That's what it takes to learn the Force. You can't be rigid. You need to have an open mind to the possibilities. And I think that I take that with me with artistic things. I was just talking to my dad this weekend. My dad is a visual artist. And I was asking him about some of his early lessons in visual art, in drawing. And he was telling me about how he had a teacher who told him to that, like, my dad wanted to draw some snow tracks. And the teacher told him, was like, you think you know what snow tracks look like? Go pick one track and look at it and see what it really is and see how the details change it. See where the shadows land. And I thought of that, unlearn what you have learned, because we get things in our head in a certain way. And then sometimes to truly see them, we have to unlearn what we have learned. And I think about that even like with the debate that's going around with how can Obi-Wan and Vader meet each other? And when I see people say, well, they can't have, right, you know, that's an unlearn what you have learned moment of like, but let's look at it again and see it from a different point of view.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. You just taught a lot of things there. I love that. No, I think you're right, because it's definitely the warrior thing and all the meanings there, but there's a reason Yoda is on inspirational posters all through offices everywhere. A lot of things to take there, and that's why that scene is it's very powerful. That Dagobah scene is again, obviously, we're not talking about some obscure scene that is not talked about a lot, but it's the gift that keeps on giving. I think there's so much there, and it's kind of the heart of the original trilogy.
Yeah. But, you know, I go back to that great Carl Weathers quote from the Disney Gallery, too, of how he saw Empire Strikes Back, you know, when he was a younger man. It's like, cool, great, got it. And then saw it again as an older person. They're like, wait, those things have real specific meanings. They aren't just like, does somebody have a Zen book? Let's just have Yoda say those things. You know, like they do come from that tradition, right? But they apply to the story and they apply to our lives. And they aren't wallpaper. Star Wars, it's not wallpaper.
Love it.
Great new phrase. Just real quickly for me as well, because we've talked about a lot of them, but almost all of Padme's lines are under-examined, that she is always correct. We've talked about a lot about to be angry is to be human, which is, you know, her response to Anakin losing it and admitting to doing something violent and awful. And that's one of those perspectives that Anakin can't get from the Jedi, because they're just going to tell him what he did is wrong, and it is. But also, in order for him to learn that and change, you know, you have to start from that point of like, you should control your anger, but there's no point in pretending that you don't get angry, because just denying it is only going to make it worse. And, you know, there's great wisdom in that Padme line. I think I was just reading the first five issues of the new Darth Vader comic written by Greg Pak. And I was happy to see more made of a lot of Padme's lines and moments. But that they're still good in him, I think, is another thing that sometimes we can look at as wallpaper of like, yeah, Padme loved him and that's the last thing she died. And it's tragic. But knowing that Obi-Wan heard that and maybe this Obi-Wan show is him trying to do something about that, knowing that Luke fulfilled what his mother started by getting through to Anakin is powerful. And that line, I think, has more weight than we sometimes give it credit for.
I am all for a re-examination of what Padme said. That's just a new theory, a new podcast series here at Force Center.
Absolutely. Great question, Mac. And our final question is from Simon Huffnagel. Simon says, if The Mandalorian ever has an episode set on Batuu, how would you feel about them filming scenes in Galaxy's Edge? Obviously, you'd have to work around CGI edit the parts that are expressed. They're expressly Resistance or First Order themed. But I think there are enough spots that they could work with for at least one sequence. Would it be worth it to try, or would seeing the theme park land take you out of the moment? What do you think?
Yeah, no. They'd completely redress it as needed. No problem there. Batu is going to be, we're definitely going to Batu and Mandalorian, but now that I've seen it, I can't unsee it, Simon. I want them to go there. That'd be an easy one to recreate on the volume, right? You could do that real successfully, but I would love the idea of part of it being filmed at the actual galaxy's edge in Anaheim, or hey, maybe do one in Anaheim, one in Orlando. That way, anytime I go there again, I can stand on an actual Star Wars set and I'd pay $50 extra for it.
Right. This is where that one stormtrooper fell down. $50 to fall down like the stormtrooper. Yeah. Yeah, I'm torn on this one. Because I think I've mentioned before, there's a couple little noises that the child makes, that Grogu makes, that almost sounds like he's saying Batu to me. So I was like, are they going to Batu? That's not an actual prediction. That's just my ears being weird. But I would love, just sort of in canon, it seems like the kind of place Mando would go for a mission. That somebody would quest him to go, you know, get him some sort of, you know, necklace collectible on Batu at Blackspire. So I'd love to see it. I want to think that, yeah, between the, if they mixed in the volume with the actual physical buildings in a way that I couldn't tell. And it's like, oh yeah, that is the outside of Savvy's workshop, but there's nothing like, you know, real world about it. You know, they don't accidentally leave a jeans guy in there.
Yeah.
With a churro. You know, that would be really fun to see those buildings that are like, yeah, that's for real. I can physically go there. But then also with the volume, you know, they do a good job, at least in Disneyland, of kind of blocking so you can't really see the normal outside world. But it'd be great to see, you know, on the volume, the rest of Batu spreading out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that yeah. Yeah, I they've done such a good job. I think I was like, hey, cool, this all sounds good. Volume sounds great. And then, Galaxy's Edge Batu sounds great. And then, you know, fortunate enough to go there. And I know not everyone has experienced it yet. And hopefully you all get a chance. It's so special that now all I want is more Batu. It's so weird to think that, but yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, take Grogu to the wishing tree, damn it. That's yes. What I say.
Nothing to the refresher.
Yeah. Those are our questions then. Great ones. Great variety of kinds of questions from Simon, Mac, Warren, Kane. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all indeed, and we appreciate the warm sentiments as well, Mac. As Joseph said earlier, we can let you know where we're going to find us. I'll do that right now. Ken, where are your notes? All right, there they are. Hi, everybody. We are on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well, and we have the podcast on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can go to patreon.com/ForceCenter to support us directly. But as always, just tell a friend about Force Center. Share the joy of celebrating Star Wars, and we can just grow this family. We got our own things going on as well, including I got a new thing launched called GPA, Good People Association, production company coming. You can follow my Twitter page at Ken Napsok for more information as we tease it on out, or go to kennapsok.com. We'd like to highlight charities here, things in the real world that we are plugged into or want you all to know about. And I have said this before, I am a bone marrow donor. I've signed up a while ago and refreshed and reconfirmed my commitment to Be the Match. I'd love you all to check out bethematch.org. Because bone marrow donors can absolutely save lives and are needed every day. Joseph, what do you got?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all sorts of different comedy adventures. I have an actual comedy adventure coming up. For years and years, I have done a New Year's Eve show. New Year's Eve is one of my favorite holidays because it, you know what, it's got themes. Out with the old, in with the new. It's a holiday that's about starting fresh, having fun. So it's always been one of my favorite holidays, and I've loved doing New Year's shows. And my friend Laser of the Double Clicks, who I've been doing a show with here in Los Angeles called Game Night, we've done a New Year's show in Los Angeles together for the last several years. Laser very kindly reached out to me and said, you know, you can't let your tradition go by. Let's do an online New Year's Eve show. So we are going to do that. It's just going to be a night of comedy and music and weird online fun. So if you would like to attend that through the internet, you can get tickets. You can go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com, and there is a link right on the front of the page. The online show is going to be 7:30 Pacific time. So we will count down to 9 o'clock Pacific time. And then, you know how time works. It'll be midnight for some people. But if you're interested in that, check that out. Again, that's going to be on my website, josephscrimshaw.com.
Well, that's going to be fun. A good way to ring out this, complicated year.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. Goodbye for us. A fun-filled look at Star Wars news. Big questions, more to dive into in that cave. We'll return to, we've got a big Force Center Star Wars scene-by-scene breakdown this week. Luke, Vader, Walkway of Doubt. Enough said. Join us then. We'll see you all next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.